You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Bill Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram from the Trussell Tribune, filling in for Phil Williams today. Phil's taking a little break. He has for several days this week. You've heard from the second team. We've all come in to take our place and do our duty and fill in for Phil because he does such a great job here on Right Side Radio dealing with the ruffians. I've been asking you guys to text in. I appreciate it. Some of you have responded, and I think that's helpful. Let's go to some texts we've received from John Paul over in Huntsville. John, and John, you're one of my favorite ruffians, by the way. The day I stumbled in the middle of Phil's show and just kind of crashed in on he and Boomer, you gave me an A-plus that day. I've never forgotten that. And you've given me an A-plus again.
It just stuck with you, didn't it?
I'm telling you, you don't forget people that are kind to you like that. I'm married. I don't take kindness for granted anymore. In fact, I'm going to have John call my wife and tell her what a great guy I am. I think that'll be helpful. John's brought up some good questions. One of them, and this is going to be a topic of conversation, I think, that will encompass the state over time. Sylvia Swain is a transgender woman who has announced her candidacy to run for the House of Representatives, and that will be in District 55. And John Paul wants to know if she is a threat to the Democrat nominee or a threat to be the Democrat nominee for District 55. John, my opinion is she is the odds on favorite for that seat. Helping her with that campaign and guiding and directing her is Patricia Todd, former representative, the first openly gay representative in the state of Alabama. And she is working with Sylvia Swain on that campaign. I think that alone will make make Sylvia a very formidable candidate. Patricia Todd knows that district. She knows what it takes to win. Had she not made the faux pas of trying to out Governor Ivey, who immediately came out and said, "I'm not a lesbian," and quit accusing me of these things, Patricia Todd would probably still hold that seat. She was not running for re-election. She had taken a job in Florida, which was promptly rescinded after she made the comments about Governor Ivey and tried to use homosexuality as a weapon. Kind of odd for an openly gay person, but she did that. And so she lost the job and she lost her seat, but she is still very strong in that district and very popular in that district. And helping Sylvia with the campaign could be the difference maker. So that's a great question. We haven't talked a lot about that, the announcement of that candidacy, but we will be talking a lot more about it. I assure you that's going to be a big topic. And thank you again, John, for the second A-plus. Also, you ask about Jeff Poor's show and if he gives away prizes for the free-for-all Friday that Dale Jackson does, if he does anything similar on the Jeff Poor show. I think Boomer already texted back and told you he wasn't sure, but he didn't think so, and I think Boomer's correct on that. I can tell you with a pretty high degree of confidence, if you're seeing Dale Jackson do it on his show, you are probably not going to see Jeff Poor doing it on his show. And it is, just so you guys know, there are a lot of conservative voices in the state. Generally speaking, we all get along famously. I mean, I consider all of these guys friends, and they consider each other friends. But that does not alleviate the harassment. It is anticipated. It is expected. And some of us are better at it than others. Jeff may be the best in the state at it. Dale thinks he's the best at the state at it. So you can imagine that makes for a pretty good dynamic. Got a text in from Amy over in Rainbow City. It's kind of a long one, Amy, and I'm not a fast reader, and my glasses need adjusting, but let's get through this. What do you think the Alabama Attorney General will do after the groundswell of parents are requesting that APLS, Alabama Public Library Association, disassociate with the National American Library Association after many books have been discovered across the state of Alabama in children's sections that are inappropriate for those sections? Amy, apologies, but I'm going to try to paraphrase the rest. I think I know where you're going here. It's also reported that ALA tried to prevent and sabotage faith-based story last Saturday. This is the Kirk Cameron appearance at the Madison Library that she is referring to. I don't know the legalities, Amy. That's the short, most accurate answer that I can give you. I will tell you I have a great deal of confidence in our current Attorney General, Steve Marshall. He catches a lot of flack when he goes after and files suits that some people consider to be more political. I don't. I think the issues that he has chosen for Alabama to join in, the suits he's chosen for us to join in, and the suits that he has undertaken on his own, if you look at Attorney General Steve Marshall's overall record as the AG in this state, he is right far more often than he is wrong. Nobody wins every case, but he wins more than his share, and I would guess a substantially high percentage of those cases. So I trust his judgment on the legalities. Sometimes what we find in some of these associations, they have autonomy and they can kind of do what they please and they can join who they please. You know, it's kind of like AEA. They are an affiliate of the National Education Association, which is, and I agree with Republican Chairman, State Chairman John Wall on this, they are a de facto arm of the Democratic Party. So when a supermajority in Alabama says, we're not comfortable with that, we think you should disassociate with that organization, AEA could make the decision to not be an affiliate of NEA. Thus far, they've not made that decision. They are still part of the National Education Association. I challenge any average voter in Alabama, because the average voter in Alabama is going to be conservative, is going to go lean conservative on most issues. But I challenge any of them to read the policies of the National Education Association and tell me that they agree with any of it. It is so far removed from the majority belief in the state of Alabama that I don't see how AEA is comfortable with that. But you've also got to remember that the National Education Association had to step in and bail out AEA financially just a few years ago. After the passing of Paul Hubbard, the next executive secretary did not make friends and influence people in a positive way and pretty much led the group into bankruptcy. So they may still be beholden to the NEA, and you may have some type of affiliation or association similar with the Alabama Public Library Association and the American Library Association. I wish I knew more about that. I wish I had a little deeper knowledge. Your question is probably going to lead me to read more and dig into that a little bit. Let me say this, Amy. I believe very strongly that any local organization that is funded by taxpayers and is funded by local governments, regardless of any association they have outside or maybe a statewide association or a national association, I think they have an obligation, because most of their funding usually comes from local funds or state funds, I think they've got an obligation to reflect the standard of their community. And if the community feels strongly one way, I think all government entities ought to work to support the feelings and the belief system of the people who are supporting and funding them. And I think that's just a practical matter in most cases. I know that doesn't happen all the time. I know it doesn't happen quite often. And I think that's a mistake. And I would say that even if the voter base in Alabama leaned very liberal, I would still say you should respect the feelings of the people who are funding you. And I think that's what a lot of these libraries are going to have a problem with. I don't think they are reflecting the majority of their community. And that's a dangerous thing, because they are dependent on that community and they are dependent on those people. I don't see any reason in the world for politics to be involved in our public libraries. I don't see any reason for that. I can't think of any reason for that. I don't think asking a library, nobody's asking them to ban books, though that's what the opposition likes to say, and that's the picture they like to paint. Nobody's asking them to ban books. Nobody's asking them to censor books. What parents want are those books to be put in the appropriate section, so that they are available to children or library users of the appropriate age. Nobody's saying take them out. They're just saying get them out of the little kiddie section that would normally be reading about Clifford the Big Red Dog. We don't necessarily think our young children need to be reading about sexual preferences, sexual acts, and stuff that, frankly, is not even permitted to be read in a school board or a library board meeting with all adults present. So it's a good question, Amy. I don't think I gave you a great answer, but I think what I would leave you with is that I have confidence in Steve Marshall to make the right decision there, and I think he will pursue every available legal approach to that. So appreciate both of you guys sending text in. It does help. It gives me something to talk about. Let me kind of recap what we've done today. In case you just joined us, we've heard from Danny Garrett, Representative Danny Garrett, and we have heard from Jeff Poore. We are going to hear from Tribune Political columnist Paul DeMarco very soon. He'll be joining us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the goings-on in Alabama politics. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. This is Scott Buttram from the Trustful Tribune filling in for Phil Williams. Phil's taking a little break. If you ever want to join us at the Trustful Tribune and you don't live in the area, the easiest way to do that is TrustfulTribune.com. We welcome you. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Scott Buttram. If you like somebody who talks a lot of trash, then you'll enjoy following me. If you don't, you'll probably enjoy hating me. But either way, I could be entertaining. Did have a text in from Allison in Madison that I wanted to mention here. She loved Jeff Poore's comments on Dell Jackson. Jeff will be so happy to hear that. Otherwise known as Dick Johnson by Dan Bogino. I think it's awesome that he made Dan's radar. I do too, Allison. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I was not aware of that. Good stuff there. We're going to be joined at the bottom of the hour by Tribune political columnist, former state representative Paul DeMarco. Paul is also the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, Jefferson County chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. And we'll get a chance to find out. You guys probably aren't aware of it, but I made some comments last week on Jeff Poore's show, and I'm a guest on Jeff's show. I wouldn't say weekly, but probably every couple of weeks, maybe a little more often on average. But we were talking about the Alabama Republican Party Executive Committee was voting on whether or not to forbid school board members from accepting AEA campaign contributions. Let me start by saying I support that. There's been actually a rule in the Republican Party dating back to 2010, 2013, when legislators were told, you shouldn't accept this money. They are a division of the National Education, affiliate of the National Education Association, which is basically an extension of the Democratic Party. I agree with the Alabama Republicans on that. I agree with the Executive Committee on that. I think they should have been more forceful with that rule and with candidates because now we have quite a few legislators, Republican legislators, that take quite a bit of money, campaign money from AEA, and I don't think they should do that. I mean, this is a party who has worked against conservative issues and interest in the state of Alabama. At one point, they practically ran the state government here in Alabama. They're by far and away the largest special interest contributor to campaigns, almost doubling campaign contributions from the Business Council of Alabama and other groups. So I agree with the executive committee in that this should not be part of school board races. Here's the thing that I found frustrating, and that was that the legislators were the ones letting it go, and the executive committee took no action in that direction. So we'll talk about that a little more with Paul DeMarco. Right now, I want to go to a caller. We've got, let's see, who we got here? Brian from Huntsville. Brian, first of all, thank you for calling. You're my hero, man. You may have made my afternoon a little easier. What's on your mind today, Brian?
Oh, a couple of quick comments and then a question for contemplation. First of all, John, I admire your temerity on grading our substitute teacher. And the second is on placement of the items, school libraries and such and everything. Do you remember before Trump got elected, how many grocery stores were putting an opaque piece of plastic in front of any magazine he was on front of?
Actually, I did not remember that. I remember when they put up the opaque covers in the checkout lines because some of the covers were questionable for kids. I didn't realize they did that with Trump magazines. Where did that take place?
This was before he got elected, and while everything was going on, and not everybody's doing, but a lot of people were intentionally, clerks, whatever else, placing in front of it because they had a hatred for him over at the time based on charges.
You know,
based on alleged charges.
Yeah. One of the things that has been interesting to me, and Brian, you're a conservative. I know that historically conservatives have not believed in boycotting. In fact, I'm just going to say I don't really believe in boycotting. That doesn't mean choices I make aren't influenced by people that I might be spending money with. While I might not join a formal boycott, when I see businesses acting this way, I may lean against walking in them. In fact, I know there have been occasions when I've done that. But, you know, following the Dylan Mulvaney and the Bud Anheuser-Busch fallout, where conservatives just said, you know what, we've had enough, and we are going to make a statement with our pocketbooks. I would be interested to see what would happen to a local grocery store that tried to pull that stunt today. I think they could shut their doors in record time by trying to play politics.
Well, the serious question for contemplation very quickly, if school choice is fully enforced and everything, what down the line, as people move to get closer to their school of choice, is that going to do to redrawing election lines?
That is a thought that has crossed my mind. What Brian is asking about, there are parts of the state of Alabama where migration due to public education and opportunities or lack thereof, migration has followed that in the state of Alabama. There are parts of this state where kids grow up, and I'm talking about kids of both colors, both races, grow up, go to college, get an education, and choose not to return to their hometown because of the education situation. And it may be the fact that if you're going to live there, you've got to factor in paying private school tuition for your kids along with a mortgage. Or it may be if you move back, you don't have that private school. Maybe that private school doesn't accept students of all races, so maybe that option's not available. But we've had in Alabama, and I've said this before, we suffered through a period of white flight where whites moved away from areas because they weren't happy with the racial situation. I think that is something that kind of spiked in the 60s and 70s, probably carried on a little bit in the 80s. But now we are suffering from bright flight all over this state where educated kids are choosing not to move home because they don't have that educational opportunity for their children.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see how this goes. That's a great point. We'll be right back. Got a break. When we come back, Paul DeMarco will join us. Thank you. Stay with us here on Right Side Radio. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram filling in for Phil Williams today as Phil takes a break for a few days. Joining us now, my very good friend and our award-winning political columnist at the Trustful Tribune, also chairman of the Jefferson County GOP, Paul DeMarco. Paul, how are you, my friend?
Good former. Great, Scott. Hope you and your listeners are well on this Friday afternoon, and you're filling in feel this afternoon?
I think we're doing well. Hearing a little bit from our listeners, for I had to shame them to start the show because they treat me when I come on. They treat me like the substitute teacher. They're back in the back of the room talking among themselves and cutting up. But I've gotten some of them calling in and texting, and I'm telling you, those listeners can make the show a whole lot better and make my job a whole lot easier. So they have stepped up today, made it kind of easy for me. We've had Jeff Borone. We've heard from Danny Garrett. Danny's talked about the redistricting, you know, and you and I have talked about this extensively. You've written about it extensively. It's now ready to be put back in the hands of the court. And, of course, Jeff had a lot of interesting things to say about Dale Jackson that were hysterically true and funny. So it's a good show so far. Hey, you're driving back and you're on the road, so I know you can give us a little bit of time. What is your most recent issue in your political column in the Tribune?
Well, I was talking about Space Command, and look, there's been, and obviously in North Alabama it's more important, and everybody's talked about it from every angle. Here's my angle.
Yeah.
This is bigger than just Space Command, because if you look at the state of the military right now, and the low morale,
right,
low recruiting numbers, what's going on with the DEI policies at the academies? And look, there's been big scandals at the Coast Guard Academy and the Air Force Academy. It's been one thing after another. And so, what has happened with the Space Command is basically kind of emblematic of all of the problems with the United States military, which is we've got the best men and women serving in our armed forces, but we really have a problem at the top. Mm-hmm. And when I say the top, I start at the commander-in-chief and his political appointees. And this Space Command and the way it was handled was just disgraceful. But the good news is the chairman of the armed services is Alabama Congressman Mike Rogers.
Right.
And he can get to the bottom of what has happened here. And so hopefully with him leading the charge, along with Senators Tuberville and Britt and the rest of the congressional delegation, including Congressman Strong in Huntsville, they can get to the bottom and show not just Alabama, but the public how politics was put above national security.
Well, that's the irony of this, Paul. This whole thing began... And you know what? I think in order to have a legitimate conversation, and I'm talking to our conservative listeners now, okay? I'm talking to the family, all right? You guys need to listen to this. In order to have an honest conversation, we have to go back to how this started, okay? It started when the government went through a vetting process. Huntsville finished at the top of the list. Colorado finished fifth on that list. It was a process that was where every possible community that they were considering was treated the same, and Alabama came out on top. Colorado came out fifth. But then Donald Trump goes out and makes speeches saying, hey, I single-handedly picked Alabama, taking credit for it. It wasn't accurate. It wasn't necessary. He was in campaign mode and saying things that were not helpful for this, especially when he ended up losing the campaign and Joe Biden put a hold on everything because he wanted to make sure politics wasn't playing a part. And then Joe Biden turns around and makes a purely political decision, which does not surprise anyone. But we need to be honest, Paul, in talking about the fact that Trump's bravado led to some of this. And he's not blaming him for the final decision. I'm blaming Biden for the final decision. But that's why politics should be left out of our military, period.
Well, again, Huntsville got chosen not because of President Trump's statement.
Right.
The appointment was because Huntsville and North Alabama have the best cred, the best credentials when it comes to infrastructure and education and property and everything around it. I think it beat out maybe 59 other cities.
That's right. That's right.
Around. And so, but now to go to Colorado is absolutely the problem, especially since we need to know how this decision changed.
Right.
And that's why there need to be subpoenas
there do.
That need to be
there
sent.
Do.
And they need to be brought before the Armed Services Committee and put people under oath with the penalty of perjury and say, how did this get changed? This was not a political decision from the very beginning. It wasn't. Now, look, I'm sure President Trump wanted it to be in Alabama because, hey, Alabama does support him.
Yeah,
but the difference,
I get it.
The difference between President Trump and Alabama is the evidence, the objective evidence supported picking it here.
That's right.
When President Trump made that statement. So at least when President Trump said, hey, I got it here, it was based on all the evidence that, hey, it needed to be in Huntsville. Biden doesn't have that. This is a purely political decision, and that's the difference between what President Trump said and Joe Biden.
Paul, there was a time in my lifetime when it didn't matter who was in control, who was in power in Washington, who was sitting in the White House. It was just simply understood that when it came to the military, politics were set aside, and what was best for the security of this country and the defense of this country, that's the only thing that ever got it a decision. How did we get so far away from that, and what does this do to our national security if it continues down this road?
Well, we've already seen. You see China and Russia sending 11 ships off the coast of Alaska.
Right.
You see Russian planes fly dangerously close to American jets near Syria or off the coast of Taiwan in international waters. You basically have them thumbing their nose at our military, and that's not a reflection on the men and women of the military of the United States. It's a reflection on the policies at the top. That's what it's a reflection on. And again, you know, they keep on coming after Senator Tuberville about national security when they terminated 8,000 office men and women because they wouldn't get the COVID vaccine.
Good point.
You talk about a shot at national security. And to them, it's about politics. And it should worry all of us when we know the number one priority for the United States federal government should be the national defense.
Right.
Public safety, that's the number one priority. Everything else is secondary. The interstates and national parks, this is what the job is because we have to have men and women together to defend this country. And so here's just another exhibit. That's what I'm saying. It's more than just the Space Command. That's why the Alabama congressional delegation should get to the truth because it's bigger than just Space Command. There's a real problem going on out of the Pentagon.
Paul, we've had conversations on the show today. One of the things we talked about was the influence of the federal government over local public libraries, the influence of the federal government over local school systems through funding and strings attached to that funding. And now I know right now the Biden administration is denying this was an issue, but at one point they floated out that it was an issue, that Alabama's law on abortion ban is one of the reasons they didn't want to put the headquarters, the Spacecom headquarters in Alabama. So we've seen a history of the federal government, even if you go back to the speed limits, right, when they forced all the states to lower the speed limit to 55, we've seen a history of the federal government coercing states through funding or through different pressure points to force them to do what they want the state to do instead of allowing the state to pursue the freedoms granted under the Constitution for them to choose their own way. Does this have an end? Because it could ultimately create almost a atmosphere or a environment where people are looking at wanting to secede or civil war, which we don't need in this country. We need to work together. That's what it is. That's what it means to be the United States. But if the federal government continues to try to coerce the people in their individual states, this could end badly.
Well, that's why it is so important for we to have an educated public who are involved in the election process. and who are informed voters and are paying attention. And how do you do that? You stay informed. You read. You listen. You when elected officials talk about the issues, that's what we need more than ever. And we can't just say, we don't have to worry about it. More than ever in the year 2023, based on what's going on in Washington, D.C., and look, it's just not in Washington, D.C., like you said, as you look at what's going on at our local libraries, you got to pay attention.
Right.
Because there are folks who have got bad intent. You look what they've done in our education system. You look when it comes to the police. Every aspect of, I was talking to somebody at a grocery store today that owns a grocery store today, and they said, people are having trouble buying food because of inflation. I mean, it's every aspect of your life. You look at the old, were you better off a couple of years ago? Absolutely, than where you are now under this administration.
Right, and there's not many people that can say otherwise. Paul, one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately is the state of Alabama and how we are such a conservative state. Yet even out of Montgomery, especially from the governor's office, we've seen a lot of issues in the Ivey administration, a very popular governor, maybe the most popular governor of our lifetime. But we continue to see things like tax hikes, though she has recently turned in favor of school choice. She sat there for 2 years and really didn't contribute to the conversation at all. How does she maintain that popularity when on the surface, and I know she has done a lot of very conservative things throughout her tenure, but she's also done a lot of things that are very unconservative, and the voters just seem to kind of roll with it. What do you attribute that to?
Well, let me go back to something you said. I do agree with you. I mean, I have not seen in my lifetime someone who has had the popularity based on, if you believe the numbers that Kay Ivey has had.
She's a very good politician. She needs to get credit for that.
Absolutely. The governor has the public, and she's been through two elections. In her first one, she had some extremely good candidates in that race.
Yes, she did.
The mayor of Huntsville. And so with that said, and look, I remember I was in the state house when we had the whole PAC situation.
Yeah.
And when the governor was the treasurer. So, look, give credit where credit is due. That she has had, folksy personality.
Yep.
And also, look what she came after.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, she did, and I will say this, she made the comment to the point that we were hearing it in our sleep about riding the ship of state. The fact is, for all of Robert Bentley's problems and issues, those were personal. The state was in very good shape when she took over, but she replaced a guy that was so embarrassing, she was really a relief.
And you hate to have the lowest common denominator for an elected official in Alabama, but, when you get to the point saying, hey, just don't embarrass us. And look, we've had that fair share of Alabama of elected officials that have just embarrassed us time and time again, both in Washington, D.C. and in Montgomery. So she has fulfilled that responsibility. She has not done that.
Right.
So then you go to the next level, policy.
Yeah.
And look, again, look at the economy in Alabama. We've had, unemployment, the economy, lots of great ribbon cuttings and economic development. So I don't think the full story has been told yet because she does have 3 years left in office. And you're right, education and where we will end up being in education will be one of those stories. A lot of money being spent. Record numbers and of money being spent on education, what is the highest education budget we've ever had, and a lot of it going to all aspects of it. And again, we can talk about the universities and how some of the money is being spent there, but when it comes to pre-K, I think that's where people want to see some real academic change, some scholastic achievement. So I think she knows that as well. And you'll see a lot of focus on the governor, and she already spent a lot of time. but I think her and the state school board with Dr. Mackey will say, okay, what do we need to do to attack the problems at some of these schools where we have such problems? And that's where I think you'll see a lot of attention by the governor the next 2 years. In my opinion, based on what she's done to date on issues, she'll say, hey, what do I have left to do in the 3 years that I need to tackle? And she made that pronouncement a couple of weeks ago. So we're 6 months to the next legislative session. So her state of the state come February of 2024, I'm assuming you're going to hear a lot about education.
Well, she gave lip service to it in the last speech, but it didn't get us there. Hey, Paul, we've got a little short period on the other side of this break. Yep. Can you stay with me? I've got one more question I want to hit you with.
Absolutely.
Paul's going to stay with us. He'll be back after this break. This is Scott Buttram at Right Side Radio. You hang with us. We'll be back with Paul DeMarco momentarily. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. I'm Scott Buttram, and I'm trying to get my mic corrected a little bit here. I'm joined by Paul DeMarco. He is the political writer, columnist for the Trustful Tribune. He is also the head of the Jefferson County GOP. And Paul, I told you I had one more question now. You actually sit on the executive committee for the GOP too, don't you?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So okay.
I was the former chairman, but I do still sit on the state executive committee.
Gotcha. You're the former chairman?
As of a couple of months ago.
Okay.
So, yeah,
I wasn't even aware.
I served for 3 years, and I term limited myself, and I kept my word. So there you go.
Okay. So last week, I am on the Jeff Poore Show, as you know, I am regularly, as you are. And one of the things we talked about was the GOP executive committee had a measure to vote on about telling school board members running for office and superintendents running for office, you cannot accept AEA campaign contributions. And on the Jeff Poore Show, I may or may not have mocked that a little bit. Chairman John Wall had just sent out a very impressive press release that included a 7-page newsletter from AEA where they were basically celebrating their win in the last legislative session over the Republican supermajority. They had a lot to celebrate. They got a lot of things their way. And I just mocked the hypocrisy of 7 pages worth of information that all fell or sat at the feet of legislators. But instead of telling the legislators, hey, we're serious about these AEA contributions, you can't take them anymore, they go punish the school board candidates. I openly made fun of that. Well, Jeff informed me that when he got to the meeting to cover it for 1819 News, that he said, first I want to tell you, the chairman was kind of so-so on your comments, didn't seem to really bother him. But a couple of others approached Jeff and said, why do you give Scott Buttram a platform? Why do you let him say this stuff? Why do you let him do? And so my question is, Paul, was that you that got on to Jeff about letting me?
I'd have you on the show every day if I could. No. And watch what happens. I think this is the camel's nose under the tent. I think we'll see more discussions of this at the next state executive committee meeting come February.
We'll be looking for that. Hey, Paul, thanks for bailing me out. Thanks for joining us. You guys, stay online. We're going to go back. We got a great question in from Kathy in Madison. We'll be back after this break.